Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey.
I'm Bailey.
And I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hey.
I'm not gonna chit-chat with you because we just did a brief episode where we were chit-chatting about some, I don't know.
I just thought of something else we could have talked about.
Well, what was it?
The Ancestry Report. Have I changed my results?
That's a weird thing that can happen.
Well,
that I didn't know could happen. I should have said.
Oh, yeah. Do you want me to explain the science behind it, Lacey?
Is it quick?
As the sample size gets larger, they're able to identify, like, they're able to be more specific.
Okay. That makes sense.
As the sample size increases, more people do it, the results tend to change.
Okay.
Bailey and I are no longer African.
North African.
But my Italian has gone up significantly, which I'm very happy about. Because
how did
I
you lose
knew
your African, though? It's just because it's... how did you lose the African, though? Is it just because it's such a small amount compared to the rest that it's like...
I think that it was probably... Because it was very... It was specific to North Africa. Mm-hmm. I think that it was probably, like, a little bit... Because you know what's across that Mediterranean Sea from Africa?
If I was looking at a map, I would know.
Italy.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think that there was, like, a little... They movement. Localized it to that area.
Gotcha.
But then with the sample size getting larger, they were able to zero in and say more precisely, it's actually just all Italy.
Okay.
There was probably also like some colonization from the Italians into Northern Africa. But yeah, I got all mine pinpointed the Italian in me to Sicily.
Cool.
Which
I thought
didn't
the Sicilians
we
don't
there.
Like the Yeah.
And then they added Spanish for me. Like,
they
from
Spain. Spanish.
And Scottish.
Oh, speaking of Scotland.
Oh, what's up?
I'm going to take you guys back in time to Scotland today.
I did that on purpose.
How far?
To the 1800s.
Oh.
When grave robbing was on the rise.
What are you
was
telling
never
us?
Never on the decline?
Okay. After this,
now.
Actually. Yeah, less now than then, for sure.
I haven't
I'm gonna
heard
tell you why.
Much grave robbing.
And not just grave robbing, like to steal from the corpses, but to steal the corpses.
Corpse thievery.
Yes. So, what a nice segue, thank you.
You're welcome.
In you teed that up perfect, Bale.
It's almost like it was planned.
Yes, in it the wasn't. Early 19th century, the study of human anatomy was growing. Because medical training was getting more popular, like actual medical training versus whatever we were doing before.
Apothecaries.
Yeah, and so understanding anatomy is really important for studying surgery. You could probably figure out why. Edinburgh, Scotland, had several well-known anatomy teachers, and Edinburgh actually became like a leader, a international leader in anatomical study. Now, if you're going to teach anatomy, what do you need?
A teacher.
Yeah.
Students.
Also those.
A pen.
A classroom?
What could you use to show anatomy
notebook.
To the students?
Picture.
It's like Family Feud.
Body.
A diagram.
PowerPoint.
Yeah. You need bodies. I thought
Quizlet.
A lot quicker. You guys are usually better at that. So now at this time, you can't, like, donating your body to science was not a thing. So they were limited to the bodies that they were legally allowed to use, which were bodies of prisoners. Obviously, after all these people have died, bodies of prisoners, suicide victims, and then orphans and abandoned children.
Okay.
So children who died who had no parents, you could use those bodies.
So pretty much people that were, like, deemed by society unwanted.
Yes.
Great. Oh, losers.
Yeah.
Lacey, I know how you said that you would wait till they died, but then how are you supposed to see how, like, the blood moves?
It's a different class. I'm talking about the dead body classes.
This is
Oh.
strictly the autopsy class.
It's dead body 101.
Yeah, the live models is the next year.
So, as medical training grew in popularity, there weren't enough bodies to do all of these anatomy classes. So the cadaver trade
Morphia.
began. I made up the phrase cadaver trade, but it's probably out there somewhere because I think it's perfect for this.
No, you said the morph.
Students, I like that term you just coined.
thank you, thank you.
We should trademark that.
I'm just concerned about the usage, like how, what, how.
Let me tell you how the cadaver trade worked.
No. I'm just saying, like,
Oh.
trademarking it now seems pointless
Oh.
because how pop,
Yeah.
like, how often are we talking about
Yeah, how much
cadaver
money am I gonna make
trade?
from it now? You know what I mean?
Yeah. After this episode, a lot. You think
So
it's this episode is gonna incite some kind of
maybe this will be the
trend
one.
for
I'm
cadaver?
manifesting.
Okay, great. Manifest after she's trademarked it.
So sometimes students and teachers would go dig up bodies to use, but also grave robbers would dig them up and then sell them to the anatomists, which are the teachers teaching anatomy. You could get about 8 pounds per body in the summer and 10 pounds in the winter. Because in the summer, you had to use them quicker, you know, their bodies.
Also, it's easier to dig them up.
Yes. Now, your average citizen did not love this. You know, all their family and friends were being dug up all the time. By the 1820s, there were protests over grave robbing because it had become such a problem that people were actually protesting it. The problem was that it wasn't like necessarily illegal in itself because I don't know if you guys heard that. I dropped something. The bodies weren't considered like to be anybody's property, so technically stealing bodies wasn't actually illegal. So grieving families had to come up with different strategies to keep their loved ones from being stolen and sold for science. So some of these were hiring a guard to literally stand guard near your uncle's grave for a little bit until he decomposed enough that nobody wanted him. Watchtowers, which you see in this picture here, and cemeteries would hire guards in the watchtowers. You could buy or like rent a stone slab that would, they would just lay over the grave long enough for the body to start decomposing and not be good anymore. And these things called mort safes, which are in this other picture here, they look like kind of cages on top, so you can't get to the graves. And so it was getting harder and harder to be a grave robber because all these people were preventing you from grave robbing. So,
Yeah.
Rude.
what to do?
Can you
Murder.
imagine? Oh. That's probably what it was.
William Hare was born in Ireland. We're not sure when. It was somewhere between 1792 and 1804. I know that that's a big range, but
That's
somewhere
kind of
in there.
cute.
I thought you were going to say we're not sure why he was born. That's a good point.
No, it's just
We,
the year.
this episode took a turn. Why are any of us born? What are we doing here?
Know, in 1828, he was
Lacey was like, I
arrested.
don't have time for that.
He was
How do we
arrested
know
for
in
something,
Greece?
and he said that he was 21 at the time, but like we don't know that. There's no records. We have no idea how old he was. So sometime between 1792 and 1804. Excuse
Bless you.
me. Thank you. And we don't have a lot of info on his early years. We're not going to spend a lot of time there. At some point, he moved from Ireland to Scotland and began working as a laborer on the Union Canal. And then he moved to Edinburgh sometime in the mid-1820s. He worked as a coalman's assistant. So they would deliver coal to people who used coal stoves to heat their house. And he did that. He lived in a lodging house for a little while. When the owner died, Hare made the moves, made some moves on the owner's wife, Margaret.
Ooh.
Yes. They may or may not have married. Don't really know. I'm going to refer to her as his wife. And he took over the lodging house. So now it's his lodging house. Excuse me. I have to blow my nose.
Should we vamp during this
I
time?
thought you guys
Oh,
might. That's
never
why I
mind.
warned you what was happening.
I had something in my head that I was like, oh, that would have been perfect. But I completely forgot what it was.
When nobody said anything, I had to blow like really fast to come back.
Let me think for a second of what it was.
All right, think about it for the next time, because I'll have to do it again.
Okay.
So now he owns a lodging house. He's living there with his maybe wife, Margaret.
Maybe one.
He was described as illiterate and uncouth, a lean, quarrelsome, violent, and amoral character with the
Hold on.
scars from old wounds about his head and brow. That was a quote. Yes.
What is uncouth? Is that what you just
Like,
said?
you don't have any manners.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just say that?
Because it wasn't in the quote. And I think uncouth sounds good.
Okay, but some of us don't know what that word means.
Oh, but now we do. We've learned together.
This
Start
is how
calling
you
people
teach.
uncouth. Margaret was described as, quote, hard-featured and debauched virago. So I did have to look up a word in here. So basically, she was very naggy. And like she was like a hard drinker. So they were a good fit for each other.
Same. You said she was described as hard-figured?
Featured.
Featured.
Yeah.
Wow. What an insult.
I know. Her whole description is very insulting.
Without being upfront about it.
Yeah. Is it though?
Very rude.
It's like the opposite of soft.
A hard-featured, naggy old woman.
Not no. hard is bad, but like
who drinks a lot.
That might just be a fact.
But not hard like she was hardened from experience or whatever. Hard featured.
Yeah,
like, she had a rough
like,
face.
She was
so
fucked up.
When I think of soft features, I think of like Snow White where she's
dainty.
Just very... But hard features like she's got nice cheekbones, a good nice jawline.
Yeah. I think that's a positive spin on it.
Thank you. The naggy part is she was probably just tired of doing all the work.
It was hard to be a woman in the 1800s.
That's why she drank so much.
Plus, her first husband died, and then this lodger, she was like, oh, I might as well get with this guy.
Yeah. He just, like, wiggled his way in.
Yeah.
Wormed.
That's so now, that was William Hare. Now I'm going to tell you about William Burke, and then from here on out, they're just Hare and Burke, because keeping track of the two Williams of the story is too much. Burke was also born in Ireland, 1792. He was born to a middle-class family. He had one brother named Constantine. Nice upbringing. As a teen, he and his brother both joined the British Army, and Burke served there until he met his first wife. However, a couple years into the marriage, he dipped because he had a big argument with his father-in-law, and he was like, I don't have to take this anymore. So he moved to Scotland. I don't know if it was like they got divorced or if he was just like, I'm out. He moved to Scotland to work as a laborer, same thing that Hare did when he went over to Scotland. He met and eventually married a woman named Helen MacDougall, who he called Nellie. In 1827, they were in Midlothian, which is just a place in Scotland, where they'd gone to do some seasonal work because he was a laborer, and they met Hare. So the Williams have met. When their seasonal work in Midlothian was over, they moved to Edinburgh and moved into Hare's lodging house. So now they're all hanging out, living together. They sold secondhand clothes to the poor, and Burke became a cobbler. A shoemaker, and he was pretty good at it. He also had a good local reputation. People liked him. He was hardworking, he was friendly, he liked to get drunk and then sing and dance, which is always entertaining. He rarely went anywhere without his Bible, and the two couples had a reputation for drinking and being rowdy. So, on November 29th, 1827, a lodger named Donald owed Hare some back rent. He owed him £4. And he was going to pay it when he got his army pension. So he got his army pension quarterly. And he's like, listen, when my pension comes in, I can pay you the back rent. But then he died of illness. It said he died of dropsy. And then I went to look into that. And it said dropsy was just edema, which is swelling. And so I don't know enough about edema to know how you can die. I thought edema was like a side effect of stuff. So anyway, he died of some illness. Hare is upset because he's not going to get his money now. And he complained to Burke about not getting his money.
If you die, well, I mean, it depends where the edema is. Like, if it's in your, like, lungs, it's not great.
Yeah. Or around your heart.
Edema could also be, like, you're bleeding, like, into your abdomen.
Oh.
So then you'll die from that.
Yeah.
Like, it depends what the fluid is.
Okay. So
pretty
different
much.
Problems.
Cancer can also give you edema, at least in the veterinary field.
Infection
can give you edema.
I'm just wondering why it was nicknamed dropsy.
Because he probably dropped out of nowhere.
Well, I feel like a lot of diseases cause you to drop out of nowhere. Heart attack. That's the
Yeah, when I
dropping.
saw that, I was like, oh, that's fun. What is it? And I was kind of bummed when it was just edema. It was just swelling. And I was like, oh, that's not as fun as dropsy sounds. So anyway,
Had a
Harris
guy from
complaining to
the
her,
dropsies.
complaining that he's not going to get his money. And they decided that there was a way to make some money here. They have a dead body. There's a need for bodies. So a local carpenter like made up the coffin because nobody was like claiming this Donald, and brought it to the lodging house and put Donald in it. After he left, they popped it open, took his body out, filled the coffin with bark, and then resealed it. They waited until nighttime, and then they took the body to Edinburgh University. They were looking for a Professor Monroe, but some student gave them directions to some other guy named Robert Knox. So, real briefly about Robert Knox, he was an anatomist and a doctor. Oh, I have his picture is up there. As a child, he had smallpox, and this left him half blind, well, blind in one eye, and disfigured. Although the picture of the disfigurement doesn't really come through, which is a bummer, but it's just all
It's a
drawings from back then.
drawing.
Yeah. Maybe the person who drew him liked him. I don't know. In 1825, he began lecturing on anatomy at the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. He did dissections twice daily, and his lessons drew over 400 students. He was very popular. But you know, if you're dissecting two people a day, you need a lot of bodies. He had a solid reputation, and he helped s the study of anatomy progress. Like, he's credited with moving it along in Scotland. So they got to Robert Knox's, wherever he was, and he took the body for £7, 10 shillings. So Hare got 4.5 and Burke took 3.5. Hare got a little bit more because he was missing out on his back rent. And Knox's assistant said they would be happy to see them again when they had another body. Now, we're not completely sure the order of the next couple events that happened, so I'm going with what seems to be the most popular version. So just if anybody's listening and has like heard about this before and you're like, that's not what happened first. Okay, maybe it wasn't, but you don't know any more than I do.
You also weren't there. Sorry. This seems like a classic when life gives you lemons, make lemonade
Yes.
scenario.
They had a dead guy and now they've got £7, 10 shillings.
I mean,
You know?
what's that converted to today?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. He owed $4 in back rent and he got £4.05. So he's up
Yeah,
five shillings.
there's that interest.
Yes. So in January or February of 1828, a miller named Joseph was lodged with them and he became sick. He had a fever, he was delirious. Hare and Margaret were worried that he would drive business away because nobody wants to stay in a lodging house when one of the lodgers is feverish and delirious. So Hare and Burke came up with a plan. They got Joseph drunk on some whiskey, and then in his room where he was staying, they had him lay down on the bed. Burke laid across his torso while Hare smothered him with a pillow. Now, this murder method would have been almost undetectable at the time period with, you know, what their forensics can do. So they killed him and then waited until nighttime, took the body to Knox and got £10 for him. Yeah. Next, we have an unnamed Englishman. He was a traveling salesman selling matches. He got sick with jaundice. They had the same fear about an illness driving people away. It seems like an excuse at this point.
Yeah.
So they killed him
It's a
the same
liver
way,
thing.
except Hare smothered it, just held his hand over his mouth and nose instead of a pillow. The only one who they used a pillow on was Joseph. So Burke laid across his torso. He put his hand over his nose and mouth, dead. Take him to Knox, get your £10 for him. Then Abigail Simpson. Abigail Simpson was a pensioner who lived in a village outside Edinburgh, so she lived on a pension, but to supplement it, she would travel to the city to sell salt. On February 12th, only a couple of these we have like actual dates for. On February 12th, one of the men, we're not sure which, invited her to the lodging house when he saw her out selling salt. Apparently, people would just be invited places and go there. Somebody would be like, hey, do you want to come hang out and drink? And people would be like, yes. It happens multiple times. So,
Well, I mean, remember all those people that wanted to hitchhike in the 70s until
that's true. We've
a bunch of
made
people got
poor
murdered?
choices across time.
Yeah.
So, one of them invited her to the lodging house, got her too drunk to be able to get herself home, and then took her into one of the rooms and killed her. They put her body in a tea chest. Now, I tried to look up a tea chest, and all I could find was like the little boxes that have a bunch of different teas in them. I couldn't find, even when I tried to look up in like Scotland in the time period, I couldn't find one big enough to put a body in. And they use it several times. So just know they're putting her body in some kind of a tea chest. Take her to Knox for £10. And Knox didn't ask any questions, but he did say he was pleased that her body was so fresh.
Ooh. Like fresh bananas.
Yes. So a little bit later in February, or possibly March, Margaret Hare invited an unnamed old woman to the lodging house. Margaret got her pass out drunk and then left her there for her husband. And when Hare came home, he covered her with a bed tick, which was a thick mattress covered filled with straw. So super, super heavy, laid it across the top half of her body, and just left her there and came back a couple hours later and she had suffocated. So then he called Burke and Burke helped him transfer her over to Knox. £10. They're getting so much money.
Oh, I feel like Lacey's getting some ideas. I don't think it's
She,
gonna
there's
work.
more rules now. So now into early April, Burke was at a tavern house having some drinks and he met Mary Patterson and Janet Brown. He bought the ladies drinks and then invited them back to the lodging house. For some reason, they decided as a group they didn't feel like going to the lodging house, so they went instead to his brother Constantine's house with two bottles of whiskey. So went to hang out at his house and then he left for work, Constantine. So now it's just Mary, Janet, and Burke hanging out. Mary passed out drunk at the table. Burke and Janet are sitting up drinking and talking until Nellie came roaring in and started a fight with Burke over having an affair with the women. He threw a glass at
Fucking
her,
Burke.
which cut her forehead, but she was making accusations. Janet did not like the drama, and she stood up and she said, "Sorry, I didn't know he was married," which makes me think that there were definitely some moves happening here. And she left. Later, she would go searching for her friend Mary and be told that she had left with a traveling salesman. So after Janet left, Nellie left the house as well to go get Hare and Margaret. Brought them back, and once they were there, the men locked their wives out and killed Mary, who had stayed passed out through the whole thing. And Nellie got to keep Mary's skirt and her petticoats. They took the body directly to Knox in a tea chest. It was still warm when they got there. Knox's assistant, a man named Ferguson, thought he actually recognized her. I got the impression when I was reading this that maybe these ladies were like ladies of the night, and so
Oh.
some men had recognized them. So Ferguson thought he recognized her and asked, "Hey, where did you guys get this one?" And they said, "Oh, we bought her from an old woman in the Canongate, which is like central Edinburgh. She drank herself to death, and some old lady sold her to us." So the one picture on the slide is a drawing of Mary. Knox was super, super happy with the fresh body. He stored her in whiskey for 3 months until it was time for her dissection. I don't know any more about that.
I feel like if people are bringing bodies that are still warm, that should be a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, super fresh bodies.
But
And he's like, "Thank you so much for this super fresh body."
how, I mean, maybe they don't know that.
I think they're doctors, or they're trying to be.
He
It's the
was a leader in
1800s,
his
come on.
field.
At this point, they probably still thought, like, oh, you have a headache? Take some cocaine.
What a time, you know? So, at some point after Mary Patterson, a stout old woman, according to Burke, named Mrs. Haldane, came to lodge at Hare's place at the lodging house. She got drunk and fell asleep in the stable, because I guess if you get drunk, maybe you wander to the stable and then you pass out. So, they followed their normal smothering routine, killed her.
Sometimes I want to pet horses when I'm drunk.
They sold her, and I don't know if they gave her to Knox or somebody else, because this was the only one that like did not say, "Oh, they took her to Knox." So I don't know if they were just like, "Let's find the closest anatomist. We're in a hurry with this one." They did get money for her, and then a couple months later, Mrs. Haldane's daughter Peggy shows up. She also decides to stay at the lodging house. Burke gets her drunk one night and then killed her on his own, without any help. But Hare did help stuff her in the tea chest and take her over to Nox, and they got 8 pounds for her because we're getting closer to summer, so you're getting less money. In May, an unnamed old woman lodged at the house. Burke got her drunk and smothered her on his own again. Sold her to Nox for $10. Next was Effie. Effie was a local lady who would go through trash and then sell her findings. Burke actually knew her. In his cobbling work, he had bought leather scraps from her. So one night, he decides to lead her into the stable with whiskey. I picture him just holding it out in front of her.
I was going to say, that's what I pictured too.
Got her into the stable with whiskey, got her drunk till she passed out, went and got Hare, and they killed her together. Took her to Nox, got their $10.
I feel like...
yeah.
If you were a serial killer at this time, like...
so easy.
I mean, you didn't even have to worry about disposing of the body.
Yeah.
I mean, back then, you didn't have to really worry about anything except for just being caught red-handed because DNA wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And but also not dying from some other disease before you're 30.
Yeah. So soon after Effie, Burke was out one night and he came across a constable who was helping a woman home. She had gotten herself too drunk to stand on her own. So the constable was helping her home and Burke said, "Hey, I'll do it. I'll take her home." And the constable was like, "Oh, thank you. Here, have this lady." So he took her back to Hare's house and killed her. And then they took her to Nox and got 10 pounds for her. In June, they had an old woman and her grandson lodge at the house. I don't know how old the grandson was, but I do know that he was a child. So they got the boy in the kitchen and gave him food or something to keep him in there, and then smothered the grandmother back in their room. Then they got the boy, carried him into the same room, and killed him. The tea chest was too small to put both bodies in, so they put them in a herring barrel. Herring like the fish. The barrel they put on a horse-drawn cart, but the horse, it was Hare's horse, refused to pull the cart past a certain point. Like, it went so far and then stopped and wouldn't go anymore. So they flagged down a local guy who had a hand cart to help them transport the barrel and go get their money. They got 8 pounds for each body. Once they were back home, Hare was so angry at the horse that he shot it.
Yeah, I feel like the horse was like, "I know what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And I'm not being a participant."
Yeah. So now, June 24th, Burke and Nellie leave Edinburgh for a little bit to go visit Nellie's father. When they return, Hare had new clothes and was waving some extra cash around.
Yeah.
And Burke said, "Did you sell a body without me?" And Hare said, "No, I didn't." But Burke went and asked Nox, who was like, "Yeah, I just got a body from him. I gave him 8 pounds for it." They had a big fight. Yeah.
Sorry. Just like the doctor who's like, "These guys are so good at giving me bodies." Like,
they keep coming across freshly dead people.
Yeah. It's such a coincidence.
Yeah. So the men fought about this, a pretty big fight, and Burke and Nellie actually moved out of the lodging house and moved in like two streets away. Burke's cousin had his own lodging house, so they moved in with him for a little bit. But their friendship ended up being okay. They were still hanging out. They just, they needed some space.
Phew.
Yeah. I know, we were worried for them.
Yeah.
Now, in late September or early October, Hare was visiting Burke at his cousin's lodging house, and a lady named Mrs. Hostler came to do some laundry at the house. Burke and Hare got her drunk and killed her. They have not had to change up their MO.
I mean, why ruin a good thing?
Yeah, it works.
Times are rough.
Yeah, they got 8 pounds for her. A few weeks later, a relative of Nellie's named Anne McDougal was visiting, and the men killed her for 10 pounds. They killed her and then got 10 pounds for her. Around this time, Margaret, who was Hare's wife, said, "Hey, I think we should kill Nellie." Because she's Scottish, so she's untrustworthy. They were all from Ireland. And Burke said, "No, that's my wife." So that was nice of him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like they don't really care who they kill. Just anybody who walks through the door.
Yeah. Are you here? Can you drink? We're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So now that was, we're not sure. Late September, early October was Mrs. Hosser. And a few weeks later was Anne. Sometime after this, not too long, because none of these are too long after the other ones. Hare lured a man known locally as Daft Jamie to the lodging house. So his name was James Wilson. He was 18 years old. mentally disabled, Daft Jamie, and he had deformed feet, which caused him to limp. He lived on the streets as a beggar, and he was liked by people in the neighborhood. Everybody liked Daft Jamie. He was harmless. So they lure him in. Once inside, Hare told his wife to go get Burke so he could come help. And they took him to one of the rooms, and they were giving him whiskey to try to get him drunk, but he didn't really like whiskey. He liked snuff. That was his thing. So he didn't get very drunk. So when they started to kill him, he fought back.
Sorry. What? Yeah. Snuff?
It's like you inhale it stiff. It was like an early form of tobacco, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like that was his vice, you know what I mean? He didn't like the whiskey. When they had him in the room and they were trying to get him to drink, Margaret locked the door from the outside so that he wouldn't be able to open the door and get out. Their wives were like fully involved in this. So
and
he was able
to
fight back.
To kill each other.
Yeah.
Well, at least one of them.
He was able to fight back because he wasn't very drunk, but they did overpower him and smother him. And they kept some of his things. So Burke kept his snuff box, which is what you would put your snuff in. Hare kept his snuff spoon, which is what you apparently would sniff the snuff off of. I did
heroin?
A little bit of snuff research, but that's what I thought at first. But no, it's just snuff. So
you say that like it's a thing. I think it might be heroin.
It's just snuff.
Okay.
Maybe it was a tobacco.
It's a powder tobacco product that is inhaled through the nose. It's a popular stimulant and was also thought to help with colds and snoring.
Oh, it's good for you.
It's flavored with spices and...
I don't think it's good for you, Lacey.
So they took the body to Knox, who was happy to receive it. But as he was... He always had, like, some students who were, like, assistants who helped him when he got bodies and stuff. Some of them recognized Daft Jamie because he was local. And Knox said, no, that's not who it is. It's not the same person. And then... on his own, he removed the head and the feet, his deformed feet, before the dissection that he did in front of the class. Which I
wait,
was already
hold on,
suspicious.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Who removed the head and the feet?
Dr. Knox.
Oh, okay. So he's fully committed to covering up what
I was already, as you read it, you're like, how could he not at least be suspicious? And when I got to this point, I was like, oh, he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
For sure. And now he's involved in covering it up.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah.
October 31st, Halloween of 1828. This has all been within the same year. The first one was January. No, it was November. The first one was November of 1827.
It's hard to get lodgers in, so they gotta, you know, make ends
meet. Kill anybody who comes near you.
Did they celebrate Halloween back then?
I don't know.
No, because witches.
Yeah, it was probably not allowed. So, Halloween, 1828. Burke... in the streets met a middle-aged Irish woman named Margaret Doherty, and he said, hey, my mother was a Doherty from the same part of Ireland that you're from. That was a lie. That was to get her to go back with him to his house, or his cousin's house. He's the one who was staying at his cousin's lodging house. So he was like, come on back, let's talk, maybe we're cousins. So they got there, Nellie was there, they started drinking with Nellie. He left, he said to Margaret he's gonna go get more whiskey, but really he went to go get hair. So they come back, and in the meantime, they already had two lodgers at the house. It was Anne and James Gray. And so Hare and Burke went to them and said, hey, listen, there's not enough room here for, like, everybody. Doherty's a relative. We would really like just to spend some time with her tonight. We'll let you go stay over at Hare's lodging house instead, and you don't have to, like, pay any more or anything. Just hop two streets over. And they're like, yeah, okay. They continued drinking into the night with Margaret Doherty, and then wife Margaret joined in as well. So it was both couples and Margaret. And at one point, James Gray came back to the house because he had to get something, and he saw them all having like a little mini party, everybody drinking and singing and everything. Then he left. And then they killed her. And they hid her body in a pile of straw at the end of the one bed. And I'm not sure how they murdered her, and I'll tell you... like, I know they've done the same thing every time, but I'll tell you why I'm not sure about this one. So they hid her body in a pile of straw at the end of the bed, which felt risky to me when I read that, even before I continued reading more. So the next day, Anne and James came back, and Burke was being kind of weird. For example, Anne said, oh, I left a pair of stockings on this bed, and Burke was like, no, don't go near that bed. You know, the things you say to people that will make them want to go near the bed. So later that evening, Burke had left, which I also think is crazy. They left the Greys alone in the house. So they went to that room because they were suspicious, searched around, and found Dougherty's body just in the straw.
Did it take very long to find her body?
It did not take very long to find the body. So they left to go to the cops. And on the way, ran into Nellie and like confronted her about it. And she was like, no, don't tell the cops. We'll give you £10 if you don't tell the cops. And they said, no. And they went to the cops.
Good.
So while they went to the cops, she quick ran and told Burke and Hare, and they quick got the body and took it to Knox. So by the time the police came to the lodging house, the body was gone. However, they found Dougherty's blood-stained clothing under the bed. And that's why I'm not sure if they killed her the same, because her clothing was blood-stained.
That could have been anybody's.
Yeah, well, they didn't think so. So they talked to Burke and Nellie separately in the house, and they both had the same story that Dougherty came and visited, but she left earlier that day, but their timelines didn't match up. So they were taken in for questioning. The next morning, the police searched Knox's dissecting rooms. I don't know what, because nobody had confessed to anything, so I don't know what led them there. But they searched Knox's dissecting rooms and they found Dougherty's body. And they had James Gray come in and look at it and confirm, yes, that's the woman that we saw drinking with everybody last night, and that we the body that we found in the room. So at this point, police arrested Hare and his wife and the cousin who owned the lodging house, who was like, I have no fucking idea what's going on here. So November 3rd, which was 2 days later, they released the cousin. They're like, we don't think he's involved. But they've got all the other four now. They've got Burke and his wife, Hare and his wife. They kept them all separate from each other and interviewed them separately, and now their new statements conflicted with their original statements. They charged Burke and Hare with Dougherty's murder. But they were not positive that they would be able to like get a conviction. They also interviewed Knox, as you would, and he said to the best of his knowledge, Burke and Hare had simply been keeping an eye on the poor lodging houses and scooping up bodies before they were claimed by anybody. The interviewer said he was, quote, deficient in principle and heart, but he hadn't broken any laws. True.
Is this the lady who has hard features?
Yes. Can you tell by her hard features?
Oh, mad. She looks
Yeah.
like she's dressed up as a scarecrow for Halloween.
Yes. And her husband looks so much happier than she does.
He is on cloud nine. Why is she holding a baby?
She has a baby. I don't know when they had a baby. I didn't learn about the baby till I got to the trial part.
Also, the other
Yeah.
couple.
They look sadder. There's a reason that Hare is looking happier than Burke here. We'll get there.
Is he high?
Maybe it was the snuff. So they decided that Knox is like not a good guy morally, but hadn't broken any laws, was essentially what the police came to. So the police were sure Dougherty had been murdered by at least one of the four, but they just were not sure that they'd be found guilty. They didn't know if they had enough. They had like an autopsy done on Dougherty and by two people, and they said, we're pretty sure she was murdered, but it's hard to be certain. So like there was not good stuff for trial here. They also thought, the police, that there had probably been more murders, that this wasn't the first one, but there were no bodies because the bodies have all been dissected and gotten rid of. So the newspaper started to run with the story, and people started thinking that these four people had killed every single missing person in the area. It just blew up the way things will. So every they're like, wait, so and so went missing, so and so went missing. It was obviously all these guys. Janet Brown, who was the woman who was with Mary Patterson or Margaret Patterson. Oh shoot, was she Margaret or Mary? I think I wrote her two different ways. I just realized that. Wait, hold on. Now I feel bad. Mary Patterson. I think I put her in my notes as Margaret. Anyway, Janet was the one who was like, I don't want to be involved in the drama, and she left. She went to the police and was like, I think that they might have killed my friends or my friend. And so the police like took her to the house and stuff, and she identified the skirt and petticoat that Mary had been wearing that Nellie kept. Also, I scrolled in my notes, now I lost my spot.
Oh my God, she's spiraling.
A local baker went to the police and said that Burke's nephew was wearing Daft Jamie's pants. Remember, everybody liked Daft Jamie. So,
How do you know his pants
I was gonna
that
say, how do you identify
I'm
pants?
assuming, so two things. One, I'm assuming that because he was like a beggar, his pants were not in great condition, so maybe they stood up that way. And also, why would you give those pants to your nephew? You
Because
know
I
what I mean?
didn't
The
like
beggar
them.
pants. It was tough times.
They were on sale.
So, Lord Advocate Sir William Ray, I think Lord Advocate was like district attorney. I couldn't get like a perfect thing. He had a strategy to get a confession. He needed to pick one person and get them to turn on the other four. The other three. There's four total. So he went to Hare and he said,
That's
I will
why
give
he's
you
smiling.
immunity if you turn King's evidence on your friends. I think that sounds so much cooler than just like tattling on your friends if you turn King's evidence.
Yeah, I think they call it current state's evidence.
Yeah,
Yeah.
not as fun.
Yeah.
Which I think is wild that you think this guy murdered people and you're like, we'll give you immunity if you just tell us the other guy did
Yeah,
it.
why wouldn't you go to one of the wives?
Right. So anyway, he was
He
like, I'll
probably
tell
thought the
you, but
wives didn't know that much.
he refused to testify against his wife, so they extended the immunity to her. So they're like, tell us everything and you and your wife will both get off free.
Let's just give everybody immunity.
Yeah. And he agreed. He was like, this is a great deal. I've killed so many people. I don't know if you guys were tallying while I was reading to you, but 16 people in a year they killed.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah. So on December 1st, he gave a full confession. Some things that he mentioned, the boy that they killed, that lady's grandson, had been the worst. He said that he was never able to forget the look on his face when they killed him. He said they were usually drunk when they did their murdering, so, you know, whose fault is it really?
Alcohol excuse.
He was no longer able to sleep at night without a candle burning all night on his bedside and a bottle of whiskey by the bed. He would wake up and couldn't go back to sleep until he took a big ol' swig.
That's a
Same.
shame. It's
You know,
sad for him.
it's tough, you know? So on December 4th, Burke and Nellie were charged with the murders of Mary Patterson, James Wilson, and Mrs. Dougherty. Knox faced no charges, but public opinion turned against him. Many thought he should also be being charged. I'm going to blow my nose. You guys can talk.
So when does this baby come in, do you think? Do you think that do you remember the Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode when Dean needs a baby?
I don't watch
Oh.
Always Sunny.
Vaguely.
She needed a baby because she was being audited.
Oh, okay.
It was a whole scheme that she had. She f faked a baby's birth or something so that she could get benefits, and then she started getting audited. Or no. She had a sur she carried a surrogate and got paid for the baby, but then she claimed to the government that she kept the baby, and so then she was getting audited, and so she needed a baby.
Got it.
So I'm wondering if Miss Hard Features grabbed someone's baby just to seem
For sympathy.
softer.
It was part of her strategy.
Really?
So the trial started on Christmas Eve, 1828. Which, you know, things moved so quickly then. They spent a year murdering and are immediately on trial for it. So the trial was starting at 10 a.m. Doors opened for the public at 9 a.m. and the courtroom was immediately full. There was also a huge crowd gathered outside. They ended up having 300 constables to help keep order, and they had the infantry and cavalry on standby. People were mad. So once this trial started, it went straight through the night to the following morning. They did not stop because they felt like everybody was so worked up and anxious, like the public was, that they thought if they stopped and took any breaks, there would be issues of like the validity of the trial and it would be a thing. So they just powered through.
That's a thought process.
Yeah. They stopped at, well, I have it in here somewhere. So the defense argued first, Burke and Nellie should not be tried together because they were being tried together, and they spent several hours just like debating that whether or not they should be tried together. So they ended up, they're like doing their trial together, but we're gonna be like charged separately kind of thing. And they decided instead of charging them with like all the murders at one time, they should just focus on one at a time.
Oh.
And then if you're charged with one, you're gonna get, or you're found guilty of one, you're gonna get the death penalty anyway. They would just kind of stop there. So they started with Dougherty because she was the most recent. Knox avoided questioning altogether. He did not get called in to be on the stand at all. Hare and Margaret were both questioned. Margaret brought her baby into the witness box. This is when I learned she had a baby. The baby had a whooping cough.
Oh.
So when the baby would have a coughing fit, Margaret would use that for thinking time. You know, I can't answer right now. My baby is really coughing. So she
It's
was
a
able
really good
to
idea.
get a lot of thinking time on the stand. I like that nobody was like, "Hey, let me hold your baby while you go up on the stand."
He doesn't like to be held by others.
Yeah.
Yeah. He
It
actually
all
coughs worse when he's being held by strangers.
and her questioning basically came down to her saying that she had a bad memory and didn't really remember anything. So all that thinking time she got.
Pregnancy brain.
So they powered through until 5 o'clock in the morning, at which point they did their closing statements. At 8:30 a.m. Christmas morning, the jury retired to deliberate, and it took them 50 minutes.
I mean, they were probably exhausted. They
Yeah,
wanted to go to bed.
I'd
You
walk
want a
in and be
quick
like, all right,
verdict?
you'll be let's just
You want
end
a
this
quick
right here,
verdict over
guys.
22 hours. So any guesses as to how they're found?
Guilty?
I'm gonna say the grumpy people are guilty.
Well, remember, Burke and or Hare and his wife aren't on trial. That's why he
Yeah.
looks so happy.
She
They're
still
just
looks grumpy,
witnesses.
though.
Yeah, well, you know, her baby is whooping cough. Burke and Nellie are sadder because they're on trial for murder. So Burke
And
is
they were
found
found
guilty.
guilty.
Oh, I'm mixing up my people. Sorry. All through my notes, I was mixing them up, but it's such a pain in the butt. It's because they're both Williams.
Are you drunk?
Yes. No. So Burke was found guilty. Nellie was found not proven, which basically meant they think she did it, but they also don't think the evidence was enough to prove that she did it.
Not
So,
guilty by reasonable, unreasonable doubt.
reasonable
Yeah,
doubt,
reasonable
sure.
doubt.
So she basically ended up being free to go.
Cool.
And at the like ruling, so he was found guilty, he was given the death sentence, so they don't even bother with all the other murders. This man named Boyle, and I think it was the judge, it was somebody important in the courtroom, said to Burke, and I wrote this quote down because it's going to come back up later, "Your body should be publicly dissected and anatomized, and I trust that if it is ever customary to preserve skeletons, yours will be preserved in order that posterity may keep in remembrance your atrocious crimes."
Is
Could
that what
you
happened imagine if your like high school skeleton was that of Burke?
I think that would be really cool.
That would kind of be cool.
I would assume it was haunted. Oh,
So,
100%.
Nellie was allowed to leave. She left. But the next day, she went to go get some whiskey, as I would do if I just dodged a death penalty.
Wouldn't
She was
even wait for the next
confronted
day.
by a mob who was
Oh,
pretty
shoot.
mad. And she got to a nearby police building for protection, but the mob broke in. So she escaped through a back window and went to where Burke was being held. And she tried to visit him, but she wasn't allowed to visit him. The next day, she left Edinburgh, and that's all we know about Nellie. We don't know how things went for her after that. On January 3rd, so a little bit after the trial was over, Burke gave his detailed confession. He put most of the blame on Hare. On January 16th, so a couple weeks later, High Court was given a petition on behalf of James Wilson's mom and sister, protesting Hare's immunity. They did not want him to escape punishment for this,
Yeah,
and it was
that's fair.
rejected by a, the vote was 4-2 to reject the petition. So, you know, if they'd had one more person who agreed there, they'd have been tied. But anyway, it doesn't matter. On January 19th, Margaret was released. So they had kept her for a little bit longer for her protection. She went to Glasgow, Scotland, to start traveling back home to Ireland. She was attacked by a mob there. She was given some protection in a police station. They escorted her to a boat that was heading for Ireland. And that's all we know of Margaret. So I'm going to jump out of order slightly because I want to end with Burke, what happened to him after he was found guilty. So I have to go just slightly out of order here. So we're kind of jumping a couple weeks ahead to February 5th. So here, Hare is released. Now, he was the one who had immunity. They kept him for a while after the trial for his own protection because of what the women had gone through. So they disguised him, and he left in disguise on a mail coach. But at one of the stops, a man got on another passenger and recognized him because this passenger have been part of the team that represented James Wilson's family. And the disguise wasn't enough for somebody who had been up close and personal with him to not recognize him. So he told the other passengers in the van, or the mail coach, "Hey, this is freaking Hare who just got off for killing all those people." So when they arrived at their destination, which was a town called Dumfries, news spread very quickly that Hare was there, and they found out the hostel he was staying at, and this huge crowd gathered. So the police came, and they used a decoy coach to distract the crowd one way while they snuck Hare out a window in the back and into a different carriage and took him to the prison for safekeeping. But then the mob showed up at the prison, and they were throwing. I love that there's just mobs moving all around Scotland.
I feel like at a certain point you just gotta give in to them.
Yeah, they were throwing stones at the building. They smashed windows and street lamps before order was finally restored there. And then in the early dark hours of the morning, Hare was escorted out of town by a militia guard, and they basically left him on the side of the road outside of town and said, "Get to the English border."
Yeah, best
And
of luck.
that's all we know. There have been no reliable sightings of him after that. So we don't know.
What if he's Jack the Ripper?
Maybe. I mean, that was like 50 years later, I think. So he would
Yeah.
have to, you know, hobble around.
You
Don't
nice
know
thought
exactly his
process.
age.
We don't. Knox refused to ever discuss the case publicly, but public opinion was firmly against him. They all thought he should have been charged. Later in February, a crowd gathered at his house and burned an effigy they'd made that looked like him. So, like, they made like a model of him and burned it in his yard, which I think would be terrifying. He resigned from his position at the college, and his colleagues gradually cut him off. You know, not good for your image to hang out with him. In 1842, he had enough of Scotland, and he left for English to go lecture there. But he ended up being debarred from lecturing because he broke some regulations of the Royal College of Surgeons, and I don't know what, and I wish that I did.
Are they having to do with buying murder victims?
Bodies? Maybe. I'll, by this point, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why a little bit. He ended up working in London at Brompton Cancer Hospital, and he also had a private medical practice in London until he died in 1862. So, like, disgraced, but still, like, successful. So, I'm still going to come back to Burke. I haven't forgotten Burke. But the aftermath of this whole case was kind of interesting. First of all, in Scotland, the whole ordeal made people afraid of hospitals and doctors. They felt like they could not trust them to not kill them and use their bodies.
That's fair.
So,
Fair.
in mid 1828, before the murders were even discovered, a parliamentary committee had already drafted a bill to make it illegal for people to steal bodies and to regulate schools of anatomy because, like, of all the grave robbing and stuff. People had already by that point been questioning where the schools were getting all of these freaking cadavers from. The Burke and Hare murders got people like more fired up about it, but the bill was rejected in 1829. The murders also made some of your unsavory types of people realize that they could also kill people and sell their bodies for money.
That's
A
good.
14-year-old boy was murdered in London, and when his killer tried to sell his corpse to King's College in London, an investigation started, and they uncovered this whole group of men who had turned from grave robbing to murder because they'd been inspired by Burke and Hare. And they were hanged in December of 1831, but it kind of like catapulted the bill back into their attention. So the Anatomy Act of 1832 was passed. So the Anatomy Act allowed you to use more corpses than just like prisoners and suicide victims and abandoned children. It also allowed you to use any corpses that were unclaimed anywhere, whether it was in prison or a hospital or a workhouse, so bodies that family just didn't come for. It also allowed you to donate your own body for the first time, only if your relatives agreed. So like if you died and you had said you wanted your body donated and your kids were like, "No, you can't have my mom's body," then they couldn't take
You're like, fuck off, it's my right.
it. They also regulated the people practicing anatomy. Now they had to get a license from the Home Secretary, and once you had your license, you were responsible for where your body came from. So like if this had already gone into effect before, Knox would have gotten in trouble. This effectively ended grave robbing for the purpose of stealing corpses to sell. So that kind of dwindled down very quickly after this. There was some initial opposition to this Anatomy Act, and I saved two quotes because I like them. So the opposition was because the Anatomy Act still makes it so that poor people are the corpses being used, right? The people who were abandoned die and are never claimed in a hospital or a workhouse are not the wealthy, it's the poor. And people had issues with that. So this one guy, Henry Hunt, he recommended instead that the bodies of all our kings be dissected, instead of expending 700,000 or 800,000 pounds of the public money for their burial. And then this other guy, William Cobbett, said, they tell us it was necessary for science. Science? Why, who is science for? Not for poor people. Then if it is necessary for science, let them have the bodies of the rich, for whose benefit science is cultivated. And that felt very eat the rich to me.
Yeah.
And I liked it. Dissect the rich. All right, so now I'm going to come back and tell you about Burke to wrap it up. So the trial ended Christmas Day, right? January 28th, Burke was hanged. It's believed the crowd had about 25,000 people in it. People who lived in tenements that had views of the scaffold where he was going to be hanged rented out their window views. So for 5 or 10 shillings, you could go stand at somebody's window so that you could watch. I think that that was creative.
When life gives you lemons, lemonade.
Now, this I thought was a lot of fun. You remember that the guy in court was like, hey, I hope they dissect your body and then keep your skeleton forever. So, on February 1st, Professor Monroe, who was the original professor that they were looking for the first time they killed somebody, he held a lecture in which he dissected Burke's corpse. There was a limited number of tickets given out to students, and a bunch of students showed up demanding to be let in, like way more than they could fit. There was a riot and the police were called. So a bunch of professors decided, after you can't come and watch the dissection, but after it's over, we'll let you in 50 at a time to look at the body. The dissection took 2 hours. During the dissection, Professor Monroe dipped his quill into the blood and wrote, "This is written with the blood of William Burke, who was hanged at Edinburgh. This blood was taken from his head." His skeleton was given to the Anatomical Museum of Edinburgh Medical School, where it remains today. You can go see his skeleton. And his death mask and a book bound with his skin is displayed at Surgeons Hall Museum.
I don't like that.
I think it seems fitting.
Like,
the book being bound with his skin, I'm not sure why that ended up in there.
That one was too Ed Gein-ish.
That's yeah. What I'm feeling.
But I really enjoyed the public dissection and the skeleton that you can go see today. So that's his death mask. And then Hare's life mask, which I guess you just model that after you see him and you know what he looks like. The death mask is like his actual dead face.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a slide that had a picture of the skeleton, and then somebody did like facial reconstruction of like an actual, here's what he would look like today.
Did you know that the CPR dummy is a death mask?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, you didn't know that?
Neither
of you
knew
that?
No, I don't love it.
Oh, some person thought that a young girl looked very peaceful when dead, so he made a death mask, and it's the CPR dummy now.
I hate knowing that. I like my CPR dummies to be as non-human as possible.
It's a copy of a 19th century drowned woman.
Oh, God.
Okay. Well, our CPR dummies are stuffed animals.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That's the tale of the Burke and Hare murders. Oh, no.
Okay.
She looked pretty peaceful. Actually, for being drowned, mm-hmm. She looked pretty good.
All right. That got creepy.
Sorry. I didn't know that that was going to be new information. I thought that was something
super new.
You would have known.
That's brand new information for me.
Well, now you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.
Go, Bird.